that God has given Daniel throughout the course of his life about various things, about the coming of Christ, the first one and the second one, and it's all very, very weird, okay? I think is probably the best way I could describe it. It is super, super weird. And so most preachers, what they will do nowadays will stop because there's a lot of interpretations about this and that and the next thing. And it's not a genre in the Bible that is very well understood or known. And so a lot of preachers kind of steer away from that today. And I would actually confess to you that I would be one of them. The kind of messages that we're going to hear about are not necessarily my wheelhouse. So I'm learning. Oh, I'm mute. Okay. That's because it's not on. How's that? Am I on now? So these I'm learning with, so bear with me. I'm going to try and give you, there's lots of interpretations about what we're about to learn about. I'm going to give you mine, and you can feel free to disagree with that. But today we're going to be looking at a series of stuff about the second coming of Christ and the end times. And before we start, I think we need to talk about the end times really quickly and just kind of address an elephant in the room. I've heard many Christians say that they don't really like all that end time stuff because it's confusing. How many of you at any point in your life would say that that's you? Okay. Yeah, I would be there too. And a great many of us are tempted to skip over it because it doesn't seem relevant. And so I'm not going to bother. Jesus is coming back, and however he comes back, that's how he's going to come back, and I'm just going to live my life accordingly. But what I need you to understand is that when God puts information in the Bible about the end times, he thinks it's important, right? It's in the Bible, therefore we talk about it because it's important, right? So there's something to it that God wants us to know and understand. And it can't be something that we skip over. Now, a lot of times, you can get into these debates about pre-trib, post-trib, pre-millennial, and all that kind of thing. But I want you to understand something, is that God has a relevant and providential purpose for putting end-time stuff in the Bible and talking about it. It's there for your practicality just as much as it is for your information. In 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, okay, we're talking about the New Testament for a minute, Paul kind of takes a paragraph or two to describe the second coming of Jesus Christ. And in verse 17, he says this, "Then together with him, we who still are alive and remain on earth will be caught up in the clouds to meet him in the air. Then we will be with him forever." And what does the last verse say? Okay, say it one more time so the whole church, so we know you're awake. Okay, did you see that? Do you know why Jesus or God, by his providence, puts information about the second coming of Jesus in the Bible? It's to encourage you. It's for you to be there, because here's the truth. End times prophecy is supposed to be very encouraging. It's not about making sure that you have all the details straight or you've got the proper timeline. It's about giving you confidence that you can live by faith no matter what happens in your life. Some way, somehow, on some level, each of us will suffer because we believe in Jesus. If you are a Christian today, if you said, "I believe in Jesus," then on some way, in some manner, you're going to be put in a situation where following Jesus will hurt. And it could be really trivial. It could be really big. It could be something as small as being made fun of in the classroom at school. It could be something as big and as painful as getting your toenails pulled off, because we know right now there are Christians who are suffering because of Jesus, right? And the whole point of end time, I should say one of the functions of learning about the second coming of Christ is to encourage us in our suffering. That's what's happening in 1 Thessalonians. That's what happens in 2 Thessalonians. That's why Jesus says when he's telling about the bad news of the cross and that he's going to die, he says in John chapter 16, verse 33, I've told you these things so that you may have peace. You're going to have tribulation in the world, but take heart, I have overcome the world. Every time you read something in the Bible about the second coming of Christ, think encouragement, okay? Its purpose is there to encourage you, okay? So in Daniel chapter 7, we are introduced to a dream that Daniel has in verses 1 through 8, okay? So I hope I don't lose you today because I feel a little lost, but I'm going to try my best here, okay? We are told of this dream has two parts to it. One point, Daniel is dreaming and he sees a vast ocean or sea and he sees four really weird creatures come up from underneath it, okay? And well, the way that I like to describe it is it's kind of like these animals somehow fell in some toxic waste and come out mutated because that's what they look like, okay? You have a winged lion, a lumpy bear, a four-headed leopard, and something that I could not name, so I'm just going to call him Robo-Rex, because there's no other animal like it, okay? And Daniel has this dream, and we are told that these four animals represent different nations. In Daniel chapter 7, verse 17, these four huge beasts represent kingdoms that will rise from the earth. Now, you and I actually might think that's a little weird. How many of you think that's a little weird? Hands up. Yeah. But you and I need to understand that it might seem weird to us, but it is actually something that we do today. If I asked you what an eagle represented, what would you say to me? It represents the U.S. What does an elephant represent politically? Democrats. What does a donkey represent? Trudeau. Here's the deal. If I said to you that the elephant and the donkey were going to war to see who would rule over the eagle, you would interpret that to mean that it's an election year, right? You would understand that. And so when you and I look at the dream here in these four beasts, it's kind of a similar idea. Some of these references, the readers of Daniel would have understood. Some of them they wouldn't, okay? But it's the same sort of idea, okay? And what I want to do this morning is I want to pull out for you just three observations, okay? All I'm going to do is I'm going to make three observations from Daniel chapter 7 about the text, and the reason that I'm going to make just three is I want to encourage you, okay? My whole point today is to encourage you in your suffering. Because I know that some of you, it's been a rough week, amen? How many of you have had a rough week? How many of you have had a rough month? Okay? How about a year, okay? Here's the truth, okay? At some point, the suffering is going to become so big and so overwhelming and so constant that you're going to wonder if you should pack it in, if you should just give up following God, if it's worth it, right? But the entire part, goal of end times prophecy is to encourage you and make you have confidence even in your bleakest hours. So that's what I'm going to do this morning. Is that okay? Okay, so here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to make three observations, and these are the three observations that I'm going to make if you want to take notes. Number one, Daniel is pulled out from government, okay? Number two, I want to look at the accuracy of Daniel's predictions. And number three, I want to talk about the rise of the Antichrist real quick, okay? So let's talk about the first one real quick. Daniel is pulled for government. Daniel chapter 7, verse 1. And I'm sorry that it's in the NLT. I put this together the other night, and I didn't remember to switch it over, so please forgive me. So it says this in Daniel 7, verse 1. It says this, earlier during the first year of King Belshazzar's reign in Babylon, Daniel had a dream and saw visions as he lay in bed. He wrote them down, and this is what he saw. All right, so here's what this is saying. This is saying that Daniel had a dream, and it occurred, if you want to know where the timeline is, this happened somewhere between chapter 4 and 5, okay? And what we know about this is that Daniel is in a season where he is pulled from government, okay? Daniel, we know that by the time that Belshazzar comes to power, Daniel has been removed from political power, and that actually might seem like a bad thing. Remember how we've been talking that Daniel has been put in a position of power, and he's had years and years and years, an entire career of intense activism, and now he's pulled away from it. But in fact, what I want you to see here is the fact that he was pulled away from it is a divine opportunity. Like, after years of intense activism, he was removed from power, and you might think that his best years are behind them. That's never the case. Here's the encouragement that I want to leave you with today. God never sidelines his people. Can I say here an amen to that? Okay. God never sidelines his people. Okay. You see, in Daniel's case, his very best years and his most famous moment, Daniel in the lion's den, occurs when he's an old man and removed from his job. If Daniel had not been removed from political office, he would have not had the time to write and contemplate these visions. And here's what I want to say about that. From our perspective, in Ghost Pine, in 2022 in Alberta, it is more beneficial that Daniel was not working for us than it was if he was in a position of power, okay? And here's what I want you to see is that God is still using Daniel because Daniel's having these visions and he's taking time to pray about it and he's writing them down for you and I to be blessed with, but 2,500 years later, all because he was taken out of power, okay? God might call you to an area of life where you rock. He's called you at a new season in family, or he's given you a new job or a new ministry or a place to volunteer in, and you might be really, 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 really good at it. Things are clicking. It's like you found your rhythm. It is going to be one of the most fruitful times of your life. And then all of a sudden, when things are going well, when you're at the height of success, God might pull you from that job or that ministry or that place where you volunteer. And maybe it's a circumstance where you would have to pull away from your job, maybe a health reason, maybe you'd have to pull away from church or volunteering, or maybe you're set to retire and you're going to think that one of the most productive days are behind you. That's not the case. God never sidelines his people, okay? If God takes you out of something, it might not be because he's punishing you. It might be because he's setting you up for something else, okay? Number two, the accuracy of Daniel's predictions, okay? In the dream, I don't know if we talked about this, but if you remember way back, we talked about in Daniel chapter, in the first couple of chapters of Daniel, we talked about how Nebuchadnezzar had a dream of a statue. And every level of that statue represented a different nation that would come and rule over the earth from Daniel's time all the way to the end of the time. Scholars believe, now this is where you could push back, but this is where I would stand, so if you want to push back on me, that's totally okay. Just don't send me an angry email, please. Just take me out for coffee, okay? The dream of the statue and the dream of the four beasts are the similar thing, okay? Remember that Daniel chapter 17 said that these four beasts represented different nations. And so we read in verse 4, it says this, "The first beast was a winged lion with eagle's wings. As I watched, its wings were plucked off, and it was standing with two hind feet on the ground like a human being, and it was given a mind of a human." Scholars believe that this is a reference to Babylon for three reasons. Number one, it's reference to his wings being plucked off. is a reference to whose insanity? Nebuchadnezzar's. And at the end, when it says that he was given, you remember that story, is that Nebuchadnezzar goes insane and he acts like a what? Animal. Okay? And then at the end of the story, Nebuchadnezzar comes to his sentence and then senses, and then he's given his faculties back. And look what it says at the end. And he was given a what? A human mind. Okay. The other reason I think that way is because remember what I was telling you about different animals representing different nation states. When we talk about Babylon, you remember me telling you that the Babylon city was amazingly great, and it had a number of gates that protected the city. One of those gates is called the Ishtar Gate, okay? And it is on display right now in Germany. So I think it's Germany, actually. So you could drive to Calgary, take a plane, fly, and you could actually see what I'm saying here, okay? On the gate is a depiction of many animals. One of them is what? A winged lion, okay? Scholars believe that when Daniel was prophesying this, the people who were reading this would have understood the winged lion to be a reference to Babylon. Okay. Moving forward, there is a lumpy bear. And behold, another beast, a second one, like a bear, raised up on one side. It had three ribs in its mouth between it, and it was told, arise and devour much. The reason that it is lumpy is because Persia is kind of this combination of two countries, okay? When the one side overpowered the other one, and that's Persia. So when we talk about history, we don't talk about, it's technically called the Medo-Persian Empire, but we just call about Persian Empire, right? And the reason the three ribs, we now know that history tells us that the rise of the Persian Empire happened in three decisive battles. Okay. Moving on from there, you have a four-headed leopard. Okay. After this, I looked and behold, another like a great leopard with four wings of a bird on its back, and the beast had four heads and dominion was given into it. We believe that this is a reference to Greece. Why a leopard? Why a leopard with wings? Well, the reason is because when Alexander the Great rose to power, he was able to conquer the entire known world with lightning fast accuracy. It's just like he went like this. How many of you know what the Blitzkrieg is, right? Hands up. It's where Hitler tried to like fastly take over parts of Europe real fast. Alexander the Great successfully did that with the entire known world, right? And he did it at age 30. I'm 37 years old, and the only thing that I own is a debt on my house, okay? He owned the entire known world 7 years, by the time he was 30. I feel like a bum compared to him, okay? But here's the reason why he has four heads, okay? After he rose to power, he died very suddenly, and history tells us that his kingdom was divided by four of his generals. Okay. Lastly, you have what I call Roborex. This is probably the one that has the most controversy. I'm actually going to tell you that I think it's Rome. Let me listen to you very carefully before I think that. It says this. After this, I had night visions, and behold, a fourth beast, terrifying and dreadful and exceedingly strong. It had iron teeth, and it devoured and broke into pieces and stamped what was left at its feet. It was different from all the beasts that were before it. It had 10 horns, okay? Then in verse 19, it says this, then I desired to know the truth about the fourth beast, which was different from the rest, exceedingly powerful and strong, with its iron teeth and claws and bronze, which devoured and broke the rest. The fourth empire, I believe, is the Roman Empire. It was the largest empire at that time in history. It was bigger and more stable than Babylon, Persia, and Greece. It expanded its borders and boundaries. It was huge. It was a monster of a civilization. In fact, here's what I'm going to say, and you could disagree with me on this if you want. I'm going to argue that there has never been a civilization like Rome since. Okay? And one of the reasons is because of the sheer might and sheer power of this monstrosity of a nation. Okay? I was watching a World War II documentary a week or two ago, and it was listing all the casualties of World War II, right? So it went through every theater, every kind of suffering kind of thing that went on during World War II, and it kind of estimated the amount of deaths, and I think it was about 70 million deaths at World War II. And then what they did was they looked at the graph, and they looked at the frequency of wars before World War II and after World War II. And here's what they found. The top 35 richest countries of the world have not been at war with each other since World War II. Okay? Hear that very carefully. The top 35 countries of the world, the richest ones, have not been at war with each other since World War II. Okay? So some historians will controversially say that this is the longest peace. So here's what will happen. The United States won't go to war against China, but it will go to war against Iran or Iraq or Afghanistan. Okay? Russia won't attack the U.S., but it will go after what? Ukraine. Okay? So richer countries will fight poorer countries, but they won't fight themselves. The last time that kind of peace existed on this planet was during the Roman Empire. Okay? And it took what it's taking an entire nation or entire planet of superpowers to do right now. The Roman Empire did for 200 years, almost 2,000 years ago. That's power. They call it the Pax Romana, the time of peace in the Roman Empire. Now, why does this all lead up? Why does the statue lead up to Rome? Why did the beast lead up to Rome? Because here's what I need you to hear. It's all about Jesus. Why does it drive forward? Why does the Bible and human history drive forward in the Roman Empire? Because that's who would be in charge when Jesus entered into human history. He came under the rule of the Roman Empire. It was the Roman Empire that crucified him. It was the Roman Empire that ruled over Israel at the time. It's the Roman Empire where the church was first built. It's the Roman Empire that allowed the gospel to go out as fast as it did because of the peace and the architecture of the roads. Those roads are still here today. Okay? You compare that to us, and there's a pothole by PCA that was there 10 years ago, and now it's the size of my car. Okay? This was a great civilization. And what God is prophesying here is both the first and second coming of Jesus Christ. And you and I, we live in the time between the times. And here's all that to say is this, is that here's what I want you to be encouraged with today. God orders the events of the world as he wills. Notice that in his day, in Daniel's day, he was predicting the future, but it's what? Our past. Okay? I want you to understand something. One of the reasons you can trust the Bible is because it's true. Our faith is one of history. Okay? We're not just talking about some nice stories with a moral value at the end. We believe that these things happened. These prophecies were prophesied a long time before they came to pass. Daniel actually lives through two of them, okay? And what I want you to see is that God orders the events of the world as he wills. Nothing is outside of his control, and that should give us great courage when whatever kingdoms rise and fall in the future, they are also controlled by God. The whole point of the series is to help you and I learn to thrive in a culture and a nation that is different than our own. And here's the key. If you want the key, how did Daniel do it? This is it. The book of Daniel teaches us that God is not only the God of Israel, he's the God of Babylon. That God is not just the Lord of where Christians gather or churches gather, but he rules over all things. And he's God over human history, and it's my goal for the rest of the series to show you how that is relevant for your life today. You should be encouraged by that. Lastly, I want to encourage you with something that might seem a little weird, but it is very encouraging. It might not seem like it, and it's the rise of the Antichrist. In verse 24, it says this, "As for the 10 horns, out of this kingdom, 10 kingdom kings shall arise, and another shall arise after them that shall be different from the former ones, and he shall put the 3 kings down." So here's what I'm talking about here, if you're feeling a little lost. That last beast with the weird teeth and the thing that looks like a dinosaur or whatever, okay, it had 10 horns on it, and what that's a representation is this, is that out of the last kingdom, 10 other kingdoms will arise, okay? Now, my take is this. It's going to be one of those things that we're really not sure of what it really means until it is fulfilled. And I want you to think about Jesus for a minute. When Jesus goes around and he starts his ministry and he starts healing people and teaching certain things, there's prophecies that are being fulfilled at that time, but the disciples didn't actually clue in till after Jesus dies and rises again. So a good example is Jesus kind of drives out all the people from the temple, and the Pharisees say, what authority do you do this? And Jesus says this. He says, "Destroy this temple, and I will rebuild it in 3 days," meaning he's going to die and rise again in 3 days. The disciples didn't clue into that until after Jesus rose from the dead, right? Here's what I'm going to say. That's like this. It's going to be one of those things that I'm not sure we're going to understand what it fully means until it actually comes. And I don't think we should pay a lot of attention to it. The part I think we should pay attention to is in verse 20 when it says this. Actually, I'll just read it. It says this. "I also asked about the 10 horns on the fourth beast." So this is Daniel, and he's asking for an interpretation of the dream. "About the fourth beast and the little one that came after it and destroyed the 3 other horns. The horn had seemed greater than the others, and it had human eyes and a mouth that was boasting arrogantly." So picture a horn with a face. This is really trippy, okay? "As I watched, this horn was raging war against God's holy people and defeating them, until the ancient one," which is a reference to God the Father, "the Most High, came and judged in favor of his holy people. Then the time arrived for the holy people to take over the kingdom. Its 10 horns are 10 kings who will rule that empire. Then another king will arise, different from the other 10, and he will subdue the 3 of them. He will defy the Most High and oppress the holy people of God. He will try to change the sacred festivals, laws, and place that are placed under his control for a time and times and a half a time. Then the court will pass judgment, and all the power will be taken and completely destroyed. Then the sovereignty, the power, and the greatness of all the other kingdoms under heaven will be given to the holy people of the Most High. His kingdom will last forever, and all his rulers will serve and obey him." Is everyone still with me? Okay? No one's confused? No one's fallen asleep yet? Okay, good. Okay. What is being described here is what the New Testament calls the man of lawlessness in 2 Thessalonians. He is also referred to as the Antichrist, and he is totally opposed to anything that Jesus has ever done, ever said, or will say. And being opposed to Jesus means what? That he is also opposed to who? Us. Okay. Do you see any attitude or any spirit of the Antichrist today? Do you know that there was a time in our culture where it was popular to talk about God, and even just popular to talk about Jesus? There was a time in Canada, in the United States, where everyone went to church, whether you were a Christian or not. I kind of lived on the tail end of those days. Do you remember those guys? How many remember those days? Okay. It's changed, hasn't it? Most Canadian Christians are going to wake up tomorrow morning and they're going to go to school or the sports field or the classroom, and they are going to be in an anti-Jesus environment. Now, here's the fact. You can talk about God all you want, and you're okay. You can talk about God is love and gracious and compassionate, but the minute you bring up Jesus, it's a different story, isn't it? Okay? There is already, here's what I want you to catch, there is already a spirit or an attitude of Antichrist today, which is strongly is developed, and people will oppose you very quickly, which puts you and I in a difficult spot. And this man, what the text is saying here is that there will be 10 kingdoms that rise out of the fourth one, and one of those will be the Antichrist. Okay? And this is what it will say in verse 25. It says this: "He shall wear out the saints of the Most High, and he shall think to change the times and the laws that will be given to him for a time, times and a half, and he will do that for it will be exceedingly great." Now, what does that mean? Revelation 13, 5-8 says this: "The beast was given in haughty and blasphemous words, and it was allowed to exercise authority for 42 months. So we believe that when Daniel says for a time and time and time and a half, it's 3.5 years. It opened its mouth to utter blasphemies against God, blaspheming his name and his dwelling, and that all those who are in heaven. Also, it was allowed to make war against the saints and conquer them. And authority was given over every tribe and people and language of the nation. And all who dwell on the earth will worship it. Everyone whose name has not been written before the foundation of the world in the book of life of the Lamb, it was slain. It was, if anyone has an ear, let him have an ear." Okay? Going on from there, he is going to attempt to change the times and laws. One explanation of that is that he is going to make it illegal to carry out religious celebration. He's going to make it illegal to worship anyone but him. It won't be just Christians that he attacks, but primarily he's after Jesus. It will be anyone who will refuse to worship him. And just like King Nebuchadnezzar demanded that everyone bow down and worship the statue, everyone who refuses to do that, he will seek legal power to destroy. Okay. He will make it illegal to buy or sell without having his number on anyone's forehead. The number will mean an absolute allegiance to his reign in the same way that Nebuchadnezzar demanded that bowing down to the statue was an absolute allegiance to his reign. Listen to what it says in Revelation. And the beast caused both small and great, rich and poor, slave and free, to be marked on the right hand or the forehead so that no one could buy or sell unless he has the mark, the name of the beast on his, the name of the beast, or the number of its name. This calls for wisdom, that the one who is understanding calculate the number, for it is the number of man, and his number is 666. Okay, so I want you to stop. I'm trying to encourage you. Okay, this doesn't sound very encouraging, does it? Hey, there's. We believe that God created two entities, the church and government. The church is about sharing the message of the gospel. The government is about restraining evil. When the Antichrist runs to power, he is going to take over all forms of life, or all I shouldn't say all forms of life, all areas of life, okay? And he is going to make it hard to follow God, okay? And he's going to make Christians suffer. Now, there is a debate, I should tell you this, about whether the church exists during this time or doesn't exist during this time, whether God kind of comes down and rescues Christians before all the bad stuff happens. But here's what I want you to understand. Regardless of whether he rescues his people before, middle, or after, there will be Christians who will be suffering during this time. Okay? And this does not bode well. And he needs you to stop and think about this, right? This dream that Daniel has at the end of it, the last verse, it goes like this. This was the end of the vision. I, Daniel, was terrified by my thoughts, and my face was pale with fear, but I kept these things to myself. This was not a good dream for Daniel. I don't know how many of you have ever had a nightmare experience. You had a dream that you can't wake up from. This was that. This was a dream that Daniel had concerning the four nations that would rule the earth, and it doesn't give warm fuzzies inside, does it? In fact, the very last verse says it scared him so much that he was as white as a ghost. Okay? That says something to you, and at this point, I need you to understand that it doesn't sound encouraging. But it really is. Daniel looks at this and he's scared. He looks at what is happening, and you got to look at it from Daniel's perspective. Okay? Daniel knows that what he's watching is the rise and fall of other nations, nations that have hurt the people of God. Babylon comes in, and what do they do to Israel? Everyone should know this. Say it with me. What do? They destroy Jerusalem, okay? Persia comes in after, and the story of Esther, okay, happens during that time. And what happens in Esther's story? The people, Persians, try to make it a law to commit genocide against the Jewish people. Greece comes in, does the same thing, and Rome comes in and does the same thing. So you have to look at it from his perspective, is that every single time a nation comes in, they completely and utterly destroy the people of God. They make it hard, they wear it out, and Daniel sees this. He sees all these nations come, and then he sees this one man who is going to wear them out. It's not very encouraging. But I want to say this. He's in a spot where he feels helpless and he feels downtrodden, but God does not leave him without hope. He is helpless, but God makes sure that he is hopeful. Okay? Here's what I want you to understand here very carefully. Peace and security isn't found in knowing the future. Okay? How many of you feel anxious when you walk into a situation and you don't know what the plan is, right? Like, you got to tell me the plan. Like, how many of you feel a lot better when you know the plan? Okay. Let me ask you a different question to kind of get the point across. How many of you feel like the worst part of getting a test by the doctor is not the result but the waiting, right? How many of you that... You would rather know the 2 weeks, right? Even if the test is bad, right? Here's what I want you to understand. No, there in that moment, you are saying, oh, if I only knew, then the anxiety would go away. But here's what's crazy is Daniel does know, and it scares him, right? Knowing the future and knowing things how play out doesn't necessarily bring that peace and security that we're all looking for. When it comes time to budget, Liz and I will spend, we'll budget how much money we'll spend at gas, and then just so I'm not sticker shocked at the pump, I will look at the most expensive gas people are paying in the country, and that's how I base my budget on, right? So the other day I went to go fill up, right, and I looked at it, and it's like, oh man, I should probably readjust my budget. So I phoned my dad, who's living in Abbotsford, and I asked him, hey, how much, can you kind of give me a ballpark about what the gas is, just in case so I can build that, just in case it gets that expensive here? And he said, oh yeah, premium is $2.36. And then gas is $2.06. And I just about had a heart attack, okay? And I said, there's no way, like that, if looking into the future, there's no way that I can afford that. What do I do? And so there's this anxiety that's going on. Here's what I want you to understand. Knowing the future isn't what gives you peace and security. It's knowing who wins the future. Okay? The way I felt about the future of the gas prices might seem trivial, but it's the way that Daniel feels about the future. God allows Daniel to see the unfolding of history from Daniel's time to the end of time, and it creates in him a sense of hopelessness. Okay? Daniel is held, but here's what I want you to catch, is that it's not about knowing the details about who wins and who doesn't, who rises to power. It's knowing that at the end of time, King Jesus rules. Listen to this, Daniel chapter 7, verses 9 to 10. I watched as thrones were placed in front of the Ancient One. The Ancient One is a reference to God the Father. Sat down and judged. His clothes were as white as snow, and his hair was as purest as wool. He sat on a fiery throne with wheels of blazing fire, and a river was pouring out, flowing from his presence. Millions of angels ministered to him. Many millions stood to attend him. Then the court began its session and the books were opened. I continued to watch because I could hear the little horn's boastful speech, the Antichrist. I kept watching it till the fourth beast was killed and its body was destroyed by fire. The other three beasts had their authority taken away from them, but they were allowed to live a while longer. As my vision continued that night, I saw someone like who? Son of Man. That's a reference to Jesus. In the Gospels, Jesus calls himself the Son of Man a total of 81 times. He's trying to tell you, when Jesus is saying that, he's saying that he's the person that this is referenced to. Okay? As my vision continued at night, I saw someone like a Son of Man coming with the clouds of heaven. He approached the Ancient One and was led into his presence. He was given authority, honor, and sovereignty over all the nations, so the people from every race and every nation and language would obey him. His rule is eternal. It will never end. His kingdom will never be destroyed. Do you want to know why God allows Daniel to see a really bleak vision of the future? It is the exact same reason that Jesus told his disciples he was going to die. In John 16:33, he just finishes telling the disciples, I'm going to die on the cross, and it's bad news. It's not good news. And at the end, he says this, I said these things to you that in me you might have peace. In the world you will have tribulation, but take heart, I have overcome the world. And that is exactly what is happening here. What Jesus did by telling the disciples that he was going to die on the cross, God is doing to Daniel. You and I, here's the encouraging part, and I'll leave you with this today. You and I can have peace because Jesus has overcome the world, even in the moment where it seems bleak. The whole point of God revealing bad stuff for you is not to make you depressed, but for you to take heart that he's overcome all the bad stuff. When your world seems bleak, remember that Jesus overcomes and conquers all the bad stuff when the dust settles. When this was written, you have to understand that Jesus is still, Babylon falls and Jesus is still there. Persian falls and Jesus is still there. Rome falls, he dies and rises again, he's still there, and when the Antichrist rises to power, Jesus will be there in the end. Originally, this was written to people who were far from home. Do you feel far from home today? This was written to people who were worn out. Do you feel worn out? They were fearful that the world was getting darker and worse, and they were scared for their kids and their grandkids. Does anyone feel that today? Okay. All this is to show that God is sovereign, that God knows, that he rules, that God reigns, and that Jesus' kingdom, his invisible kingdom, will become visible, and his unseen will be seen. Someone needs to hear that today, because I believe in a church our size, there is someone who is worn out and beat up, and you're bruised, and you're thinking of packing it in for Jesus. You're just going to give it up. Listen carefully to what I am about to say, and then I will end. If you follow Jesus, you will suffer because of Jesus. It doesn't matter if you live through the end times or not. It's entirely possible you could experience intense persecution and not live in the end times. Or you could live in the end times. Either way, somehow, on some level, you will suffer because you believe in Jesus. Your health will suffer. Your relationships will suffer. Your business will suffer. Your family will suffer. Your wealth will suffer. Your sales will suffer. Your reputation will suffer. Your career will suffer. Your crops will suffer. On some level, in some way, you will experience antagonism for Jesus. And you're going to feel like packing it in. But I want you to remember that even in the bleakest moment, when the dust settles, Jesus is still going to be there. And you can have confidence in that. So my whole goal for the rest of the series, this is new to me. I haven't done apocalyptic preaching before. So, you know, you can criticize me after you leave today. but I want to try and show you how the kingdom of God will eventually triumph, so that whatever circumstances you face in life, you can feel confident that it won't be the thing that destroys you. Amen? Amen. Amen. Let's do one more song and then I'll close the service in prayer.